Sit down, stand-ups, sit down, stand-ups, sit down, stand-ups, sit down, stand-ups.
Well, welcome everybody. Welcome to podcast number one of Sit Down Stand-Ups. I'm John DeCaus.
I'm Tim Benker.
What are we doing here? Why are we here, John?
Well, we are asking stand-ups to sit down and talk to us so that we can find out stuff that you may already know. We're going to also find out stuff you don't know. And, Tim, probably a lot of stuff
nobody really cares about.
Exactly.
You're not going to want to know it. But we start on the right foot because between the two of us, we have 72 years of stand-up comedy.
Is it 72?
Yeah, it was 36 apiece.
Yeah, that's what you need to know. Tim Benker and myself started together at the Comedy Cottage in Chicago in 1982.
Rosemont.
Exactly. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Devon and River Road.
Devon and River Road. We both started there, got hired there, and have been doing comedy ever since. And,
right.
36 years later, we are still doing stand-up comedy.
Exactly. And starting there and moving on to places all over the country. I worked in New York. I worked in Vegas. You've worked in many, many states. We've come across so many people who are interesting, and they each have a different story. And we just want to share those things with everybody.
I think, and we did. We talked about this beforehand. It's a good thing to do because it's easy for us,
mm-hmm.
and we don't want to work that hard. Plus, we do know a lot of people. We've been doing this for a long time. So, podcast show number one,
mm-hmm.
and sit-down stand-ups. Tim will interview me. Podcast number two, I will interview Tim. But then from then on, we're going to have all of our friends and comics that we've met over the years sit down with you and talk.
And I'm sure, even though we've known each other for 36 years, I'm going to find out stuff that I never knew before.
You know, it's so funny. I thought the same thing on the way here. I go, I think you're absolutely right.
That's
I think
right.
You're absolutely right.
We need to take a long car drive. Maybe we need to edit
yes.
some of this before we talk
yes.
about it.
That's
well,
a good idea.
Well, if I was going to start
go.
My interview with you, my first question would be, why did you initially go to the Comedy Cottage to start doing stand-up in the first place?
Yeah, and it's so funny. When I knew we were going to do this, you start to think about some of that stuff. I was a sports guy. I played football and baseball in high school and college.
So you sucked, and that's why you thought you'd be funny?
I was horrible. And I go, what can I... they were laughing at me. There's got to be something else I could do. No, so I went out... when I went away to college, I... just audition for a play because I just wanted to get involved. I'm like, I'll do this. I've never done it.
And this has nothing to do with stand-up, but where'd you go to college?
I'm McMurray College in Jacksonville.
That's Fred McMurray College.
Fred McMurray College. I went with both, two of his three sons. I got the part. I was shocked. I'm like, I'm the only guy not majoring in this, so I get the part. Long story short, I loved it. Was in every production that year, the next year, the year after that. But I never even thought about doing stand-up. That wasn't even in my wheelhouse.
Now, this is a typical comic question. Did you do a funny part in any of those where you got the urge or the rush from the laughter?
Okay, I would never say the urge because I always got the funny parts.
Okay.
And it was a natural thing. And I was funny anyways. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd like to think I was funny, but everybody told me that. So I did that. But I also did my first serious role in Hedda Gabler, which I didn't want any part of. It's a very period piece, Victorian mm-hmm. period thing. And my theory was I got rave reviews.
Okay.
But I think I got it just like Jerry Lewis would get it for playing a serious role. People expect you to be funny, and when you're not, they give you more credit.
I got you.
But I will say this, and I think you'll agree with this, Tim. It's easier to do a dramatic role after being funny. It's not easy to be a dramatic actor and do comedy.
Absolutely. I mean, I could list 100 people right off the top of my head who've started with drama and tried to go into comedy and just fell
into it. Doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. So that's what got it. But really, I didn't even think of stand-up. I grew up watching the Copycats and all the comics and stuff. I got that, George Carlin, the whole thing. But it was the last year I was in school, my roommate and I decided to do the talent show. The winner got $25, which I look back...
$25?
Yeah, but at the time, the value of that was over $4 million. In college, $25 is a lot,
right?
You know? And we didn't do it for the money. We thought we were funny. We'll do a comedy team thing. Mm-hmm. And we wrote some stuff. And I kid you not... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, who's this guy?
Roy Crisup.
Okay, I've never heard that name.
Was my roommate in college, was my best man at my wedding.
Really?
And when We were announced. We were fourth on the bill. The whole school's there. We're fourth on the bill. I get 1 foot on the step. I turn around and go, come on, we can do this. He's gone.
What?
He bailed. And I'm still walking up on stage. And I'm getting huge applause.
Oh, my God.
And I knew what we wrote. So I made it singular. I did it. And I ad-libbed a bunch of stuff. And first time on stage by myself doing all that. And I killed.
So he just lost it.
He left. He not only left campus, he drove all the way home to Quincy, Illinois. And at the end of the day, I won. And Daryl Robinson, one of my good friends at school, we went out and had, we bought pizza for like 9 people.
Wow.
And we had a blast. And that was it. But it was my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time when I graduated. Mm-hmm. She said, hey, the Comedy Cottage in Rosemont. And I go, what is that? I didn't even know it existed. Mm-hmm. We went and saw a show. I saw you perform. I saw...
Now, you told me that some time ago. I was the first...
First comic I ever saw on stage was you reading the news.
Right.
Okay. Eddie Merrill was the MC.
Wow.
We saw Brad Pettit.
Wow.
We saw Jimmy Fitzgerald. We saw Ira Novos. And I think it was Eddie said, you can audition on Thursdays.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, okay. And I came back that following Thursday with my wife and two friends, Danny Thomas and her
you were friends with Danny Thomas?
Yes. Yeah. You think I'd have more pull. But I went up on stage. I did 5 minutes of... You know, Black American Airlines and some other stuff, and Jay Burke signed me to a blue sheet right away.
Right. I need for you to elaborate on the dialects, because this is 1982.
Yeah.
You did dialects.
Yes.
Okay. You did some that you can't do on stage
right.
nowadays, or it's right. not really, as I'll say, tolerated or accepted.
Yeah, different time. Different time. Right. I just thought they were... Black American Airlines was Ronald Johnson, so... and. You know, he just. I'm going to do it. Should I do it?
Where'd you get? Before you do it, where'd you get your flair for the dialects?
Well, my neighborhood. I grew up in Maywood, okay. Predominantly African American. Mm-hmm. A lot of my friends were African American. A lot. Mm-hmm. I was the only white kid in my grade school that graduated. Everybody graduated. I was the only white kid.
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't know. I just picked it up. A lot of different. It was always something I was into. So I have no idea why. Sid Caesar. You know, did a lot of dialects.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. I just picked it up. So I would do my, you know, my definitely Black American Airline with Ronald Johnson. He would, you know, land the plane. Just land the plane. So I would do that. And an East Indian guy. And, you know, and everybody, I don't know. It's what I did.
I'm not going to pretend. I have always loved when you did dialects. Always. I mean, there's so many different ones. You did a bit about... asking for directions.
Yes.
And I don't know if I don't remember the entire bit, if you could do some of it here, or if you could just go through the different nationalities that you did.
Well, yeah, because it was the black guy would be, you know, like, oh, are you gonna make, okay, you, okay, here what you do, you gonna make a left, no, wait, hang on, what you do, you keep going, okay, turn around, go all the way. Oh, no, here it is. Okay, if you see somebody else, ask them. That was, and then I did the Mexican guy, mm-hmm. I'm not sure, my son could do this, Toomey could do this,
right.
He could do this.
Mike, you know, Toomey.
I go, excuse me, I'm looking for Devon, and it'd be like,
okay?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for your help. You know. So that's what That was how I started out.
Right, and they can't see this at home as they're listening to this, but to watch you and have these different dialects come out of your mouth is pretty wild.
It's pretty sad.
Okay, pretty sad. This is comedy.
Yeah.
So we move over to how that's received. 1982. You're doing these dialects. You said different time, and I agree with that. Now, I mean, if you did the Hispanic dialect after the show, would somebody come up and say, hey, I really like that, or hey, that sounds just like my uncle?
Good question. I would, at first, everybody was very receptive. Mm-hmm. I was doing something I don't think anybody else was doing in Chicago at that time.
I don't remember.
Yeah, anyone. I don't remember. So I kind of had my niche, and I just fell into it. First year's not a problem. It wasn't until maybe early 90s that I kind of stopped doing it, because people would come up and go, excuse me, that's, you're a racist. And I'm like, wow, this is horrible.
Right.
But different time.
So, all right, so now you did a little bit less of the dialect and you just went into...
Yeah, just what I would call straight stand-up, mm-hmm. You know, but I'm clean. I've always been a clean act.
You always. And once again, that's a choice of yours as,
yes.
as a comic going up on stage.
Correct.
Did you are you adverse to the more blue material?
No, not at all, because I grew up on Richard Pryor.
Okay.
You know, I would my friend and I, Danny Thomas, mm-hmm. would sit in the basement and sneak in 8 tracks of Richard Pryor and yeah. laugh hysterically.
Yeah.
So to me, dirty, as long as it's funny, I don't care. Okay. It's just not. It's never been something for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's really, you know, bode well for me, because I think I got a lot of work because nobody worried about following me.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I wasn't funny, mm-hmm. you know, but I'm clean. I don't ruin the show,
right.
you know.
And I will attest, this year, following you is not very easy. I mean, I do when you host the show, and I come after. It's not easy.
Well, and hosting is something I'm really good at,
right.
too.
Right, and you are. All right, we kind of walked through the door. I just want to go back to,
yeah.
you mentioned you listened to Richard Pryor. Who else was always on the A-track or the record player when you were growing up?
Well, it's funny, because it was definitely Richard Pryor. We had a couple of A-tracks, and then I remember thinking, oh, we've got to get other stand-ups. This mm-hmm. is great. So we got Bob Newhart on, you know, and that was great.
Great stuff.
That was, and that's a little older than Pryor,
mm-hmm.
but it was really good, and it was so different for me. And then I couldn't get enough. But even then, we got a Red Fox tape, and I hated it. I couldn't stand it. We almost, I think Danny took the tape out of the 8-track.
Oh, really?
We were like, this is stupid.
Was it the one with Aunt Esther on there, too?
I think, no.
Okay, it was just this Red Fox before, by himself.
Yeah, it was a nightclub act in the 60s, mm-hmm. and it was just, Lenny Bruce we listened to a little bit, but I wasn't a big Lenny Bruce fan.
Right.
That was not my thing, but Carlin...
Right.
You know, and guys who did impressions. So we would listen to all these, you know, so those were definitely, that was good.
Nice.
That was good. So.
And I'll remember Aunt Esther's name.
Sometime
during the show. I do want to let you know that our show is sponsored here. I wanted to just take a break from.
Well, that's right. I do know this.
Hey, John, you've heard me talk about Heinous Furniture in Kewaunee. It's been there since the beginning of the time, and a lot of people ask me, where in God's MapQuest is Kewaunee, Illinois? Well, Heinous Furniture in Kewaunee is a quick 150-mile drive from downtown Chicago, not counting city congestion, road construction, and picking up hitchhikers in Joliet. My wife Jeannie and I make it there in 6.5 hours, including potty breaks. We browse the fine furniture and make a decent-sized dent in their famous wine cellar. I even use my celebrity to get folks to put gas in my vehicle. John, guess where they opened their second location?
Tim, where do they open up the second one?
They opened their second location in beautiful downtown Spearfish, Wyoming. That's right, right in the heart of militia country. Nothing's more enjoyable than the wind blowing through your hair on a 1,200-mile drive up I-80. You can pick up an 8-piece veneered dinette set that you'll probably share the ride with on the way home. Or you can stay the night at their B&B. A blow-up mattress and a bagel for breakfast.
I love Wyoming.
Visit the Heinous Wyoming location and get a $50 Love's Truck Stop gift card with every $17,000 purchase.
I love Love's Truck Stop.
Heinous Furniture in Kewaunee, Illinois and Spearfish, Wyoming. And guess what? Coming soon to Horse Cave, Saskatchewan, America and Canada's favorite showplace.
I love Saskatchewan.
Welcome back to Sit Down Stand-Ups. I'm Tim Benker. I'm interviewing John DeCoste. He's going to be a regular host of the show, but we're doing a little discovery on one another the first couple of weeks here. Now, we talked about the beginnings. You've been doing it for 36 years. We got to get to at least year 10 now. fast forward.
Very good.
A lot of acts. Okay. So, you know, you're established in stand-up in Chicago.
Yeah, I was lucky. Larry Reeb, who we both know, mm-hmm. Took me on the road with him for all the Funny Bones in like 88, and I traveled with him exclusively. And then my first big break came in 91. Jenny Jones came to Chicago to do a TV show.
Oh, sure.
Diana Limo, if mm-hmm. you remember Diane.
I do.
Got me in on it. We both did the warm-up for her show for 2 years.
Nice.
During the day, we made a ton of money, and it was exactly what I enjoyed doing, so that was good. Jerry Springer came into town the year after.
Mm-hmm.
We would go from one studio at MEC Towers and walk in the back and do Jerry Springer's.
What was the warm-up for Springer like?
But here's the thing. It wasn't... His show was different back then. It wasn't so rah-rah-rah.
Oh, okay.
He was trying to do a talk show, like have guests and stuff.
Gotcha.
So we'd go back and forth, made double the money.
Oh, nice.
Which was great. So we did that for... A couple of years, 2 or 3 years, I think, and then Zanies, one of my home clubs, decided to go to House MCs in '94.
Mm-hmm.
I became one of those. I was one of the first people they asked, and I've been doing that, working 4 months a year, hosting for Zanies. So, and then still going on the road to, you know, you name it, all the Funny Bones and improvs. I still travel quite a bit. So,
and how is it different for you? I know you probably prefer one over the other. Staying home, hosting these shows here, as opposed to going out on the road, being the headliner, you know, big red carpet, you know, which do you like better? What made more sense for you?
You know, it's funny, back in 94 when they went to House MCs, it was great, mm-hmm. because my son Christopher was born in 91. So instead of being on the road, I got an opportunity to stay in town for 4 months at a time.
Right.
So that was wonderful. But now it's like, when I'm on the road, I can't wait to get home. And a lot of times when I'm at home, I'm like, God, I want to get on the road. You know, it's people know me here and that's fun and we have a good time. But when you do go on the road, when you're, you know, Kansas City or Boston or Virginia Beach or New York, mm-hmm. when I do those every year, thanks, good guess. When I do that every year, it's fun. It's because you're different. You're just plugging in and... Right. You're like, everybody's really receptive to it, so it's actually pretty good. I don't mind it, you know. So, but during that time, we did, you know, we did the original Meet the Parents with Greg Liana.
Okay,
filmed here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. They used that to sell it to Universal for that. I thought my big break came in '94 when I auditioned for In Living Color with all my dialects.
Ah, okay.
At the Funny Firm in Chicago.
Came back.
Those came, yep. And I got to do all my characters. They love me. And I actually got to fly out to Los Angeles.
Oh, that's great.
And I didn't get it. They gave it to Jay Leggett, who was a good friend from Chicago.
Yeah.
He was with some, I can't think of the guy's name, a threesome. There are three comics that did something together. Brian... Mm. Something who used to do Letterman. He was Donkey Boy or something like that.
Brian
McFadden or something like this. Oh, yeah,
that sounds
something
cool.
like that. But yeah.
What's odd is that you should have gotten the show because you actually do a better African American dialect than some of the Wayans
brothers. Than some
brothers
of those, yes. Yeah. But I thought that was my big break. And then, but it didn't matter because the Funny Bones, Dave Stroop, he's been my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
We've taken those for years, and then. You know, we're doing corporate work, and then I meet Steve Cochran,
mm-hmm.
Who at the time was working for The Loop in the mid-90s, early
right.
90s. We hit it off. We did some shows together, and then I would do plug-in things for GN for him, characters and stuff, which is what I got to do those characters again.
Nice.
So that was good. And then we jump ahead, and I started doing things for WGN. Then Steve left, went to KTRS in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
2010, I think it was. I started to do characters, people who couldn't get booked on other shows, and I got to do every character. And we had a blast. At that same time, Rosie O'Donnell took over for Oprah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I did some Oprah warm up. I did a couple of some of her shows, depending on the content.
Very nice.
So that was good. Harpo Studios. She recommended me to Rocky LaPorte. Said you should do the Rosie show. They came into town. She took over at Harpo Studios, and I did that for a year.
How did Rocky LaPorte ask you to do that?
He says, hey, John, I was thinking, this isn't like really what I do. You should do it. I don't do it. You know, I do like stuff. You should do it. But it was great because, yeah. you know, for that, she was in town. She changed her format a couple of times, but it was wonderful. Mm-hmm. And it was a little different than the other ones.
Right.
But that's four major shows that I had I never would have had that opportunity.
Right.
Had people been nice to me and said, hey, this is good. And actually, credit goes to Zanies, too, because being a House MC, you know, I play with people. I go out
right.
there and play around. And
right. You and riff.
I riff.
Yeah.
yeah. So I was really good at that. And since then, I produce a lot of shows now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I'm affiliated with all these theaters. I handled Steve Cochran's shows outside, you know, the WGN. And then in 2013, WGN hired me to be on his show.
Right.
So I'm paid by GN.
So you could listen to WGN radio.
And hear me.
Almost any morning. And
I'll be on.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
Doing many characters and producing shows, comedy shows and stand-up shows and... different shows, put him in theaters, and
so yeah. Let's say GN said tomorrow, We're going to plug you in. You're going to have your own show. It's going to be 4 hours a day, 5 days a week. You still do stand-up?
Would I still do stand-up?
Yeah.
First of all, they're never going to say that to me.
Hypothetical. Yeah, this is a hypothetical.
Okay.
Well, I could ask the same thing if somebody said, here's a sitcom. We want you for the sitcom, and you'll be going to L.A. And
you know, it's funny. Yes, but not for me. If I were doing that, I would do what Steve does, Steve Cochran does. He doesn't do it for him. Mm-hmm. He wants to do it every once in a while. That's what I would do. But I would, if I could promote it and I knew I could sell tickets, mm-hmm. then I would bring on friends and go, let's have a fun night.
Right.
That's what I would enjoy doing.
Excellent. Excellent.
But I would probably stop doing it on a full-time basis. Mm-hmm. You know.
Very good. Well, we are going to kind of wrap up the show with something that...
Okay.
On the... What's that wonderful show called?
Inside the Actor's Studio. This is the questionnaire.
This is the questionnaire.
Yeah.
On that show, they could have the Bernard Pivot questions.
Right.
He came up with these questions at some French show. But we're not going to call them the Pivot questions because that doesn't make sense for our show. So in honor of the late...
Ricky Hewitt.
He actually started Zanies. He turned it from a strip club into a
stand-up, one of the first in Chicago.
And the longest lasting and probably the most
pretty much.
One of the most successful in the country.
When you think of Chicago, you think of Zanies.
That's right. Yeah. He died a few years ago. So we're going to name these questions after Ricky. So we're going to call them the Ricky Quickies. The Ricky Quickies. That's right. We'll just go rapid fire like that. You thought I forgot what it was called there.
I did. I'll be honest. I honestly did. I'm sorry.
It is the first. Okay. So, you know, you can a sentence or two, we'll just ask you these Ricky Quickies. Most talented staff. Where would that be?
Most talented staff?
Yeah,
explain.
I say talented with air quotes. All right. I'll be a part of the Me Too movement. Not... hottest waitresses, most cordial.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Time is up. Question number two.
Hottest staff, Mount Prospect Zanies.
Oh, back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day, Mount Prospect Zanies. Most cordial, I would say Dayton, Ohio. Funny bone.
Nice. Very good. Single most influential comic? Besides me.
Oh, God, I had my answer, and now I would say Steve Landisberg.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, he did. All right, you brought that full
Dialects.
Circle. He did Dialects as well.
And who I got to work with, by the way.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Short man. You're like 6'2". He's probably like 5'3".
He's but very funny. Great
person
guy.
Who everyone thinks is funny, but you don't.
Well, this was easy. Lucille Ball. can't do it.
Hottest room ever.
Hottest room ever. Columbus Funny Bone back in the day.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Nicest celebrity you've ever opened for. I'll say because I know you've done a lot of TV shows.
Yeah.
Go with a stand-up instead of just a TV host.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Good. Wow. Nicest. You know what? I go back to. Wow. Let's just do this. I'll go back to Steve Landisberg because I was so looking forward to it. Bert Haas booked him. He came by himself. He sat down, and all we did was talk. And I was very honest with him, and he had just gotten back into stand-up. Mm. So, and he's no longer with us. We lost him. So
I did not know
that.
That
was good.
Okay. Now we'll go to the other side of the coin. Biggest jackass you ever opened for.
Oh, that's easy. That one is really easy. He passed away a couple of years ago. David Brenner.
Okay, so we will speak ill of the dead.
I don't care. I don't care. I think I told him at the time he was the biggest ass. Yeah, I don't have any time for David Brenner.
Anything in particular that he did that raised your ire?
Yeah, he delayed the show for almost an hour because he didn't have a music stand that he... It was a music stand, but it wasn't a closed music stand. He just had some paperwork. It was open. Still held his... He held the show for an hour and then got on stage and blamed the club. I will never forget that. He was a complete ass.
All right. The venue that's still on your bucket list. You've got 36 years down. You've got another 40 years to perform. Where would you like to play?
You know what? I think back in the day, I would like to do the Ed Sullivan Theater. Because that would, if I did that, it would mean I'm doing a spot on TV. And it's the history of the Ed Sullivan Theater.
And right now, that would be a spot on the Stephen Colbert show.
Is that the Colbert? Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Colbert
okay. Yeah. But I don't. It would be the Ed Sullivan Theater. Think of how many other people I would be have been in that theater. Absolutely. You know, so, yeah.
All right. Ed Sullivan.
Yes. That's
to, to name one of many. Largest crowd you ever performed for?
I think it was over 12,000. I opened up for Shania Twain at Polar, the Polar, the Polaris Theater in Columbus, Ohio.
So you were within feet of her.
Yeah, and she couldn't have been nicer. She gave me the thumbs up.
Oh,
and
my goodness, great.
It was Funny Bones set me up on that, and it was really great. It was really great.
Excellent. Worst comic you've ever seen. And you know, this is radio, internet radio. You name names, my friend. Name names.
Oh, my God. You know, this is the only reason this is tough is because there are a lot of people who started out that are bad. Mm. So what I guess the criteria I would use is that they've been doing this for a long time and they still suck. So I would say Matt Kassane.
Okay.
I think Matt Kassane was a total, I don't even know why he got on stage.
I know Matt, a lot of energy.
Okay.
Okay, oddest thing that ever happened while you were on stage.
Oddest thing that ever happened.
Something, I mean, everything's going, you know, you got waitresses, you got audience, you got things going on. So what, any mishap, any crazy?
Yeah, I did a one-nighter in Hart, Michigan, back in the 80s, outside. And it was an all-woman softball tournament. So they were all women, and the two teams that hated each other sat right in front. And I was making fun of one. And they were laughing at them. And, well, anyways, it turned into a fight. And I was supposed to do, I think, like a half an hour or something like this. Mm-hmm. And 15 of those, maybe 15, 20 minutes, I sat on the stool with my arms folded while they fought. And when they came back, I did a closing joke and walked off. I go, thanks for taking up my time, because I didn't want to do this show anyways.
I've never heard that story,
by the way. That's pretty bad.
Okay, now you... We talked about traveling on the road. They don't always put you in hotels. They usually put you in a condo.
That has changed. A lot of hotels now.
Okay. Yeah. All right. But you went through the years where there were condos.
Okay.
Worst condo, place, and club it belonged to.
Worst condo. I'm going to give it a tie to Traverse City. I don't remember the name of the club. It was a Yoder book thing. I didn't stay there because it was a building with two bedrooms upstairs, no front door. There wasn't a front door. So I did not stay there, but I would say the worst one, because I didn't see the inside of that one, the worst one, just recently too, Cincinnati, the Montgomery Funny Bone, which has since moved, Cincinnati Newport Funny Bone. I spent the first day cleaning. This is about 6 years ago. I cleaned. There was a tip jar for the cleaning crew, which I'm like, why should I give myself money?
Right.
You know? And the best part was the second day when I had just had it, I go, this is ridiculous. Nothing works. They slid under my door. I got evicted. I got evicted and I called the club and I go, I need a hotel. And they go, is it really that bad? I go, no, I just got evicted. You need to find me a place. And they did. They actually were nice about it, but it was the worst.
You cleaned it.
After I cleaned
things,
it. Yeah.
Right.
But I made money. I tipped myself.
I'm just imagining you in the French maid outfit. Last one. If you could bring back one comic from the dead and work with them, who would that be?
Oh, my God. I'd say Richard Pryor. To be able to, you know...
Just I have never a conversation with
yes.
him for
Christ. Yes, I just, you know... I don't know. I get mad because Pryor was, you know, if you picked up Pryor when he was in The Toy or some of those other, you know, shame on you. But if you saw him do straight stand-up in the 70s, I still don't know who could even hold a candle to him. He's that good.
Just the strongest personality.
Yeah.
Even though he was...
He was so different because he did characters. He could paint the picture. I mean, I know this is over the top, but he could... He wasn't just a joke guy.
Right.
The situation was funny. The people, and we listened and laughed.
Right.
So, yeah, I would say Richard Pryor.
Very good. And what's next for you? You can plug. You know, we don't know what long term. What's going on with you?
Long term, I'm still working for WGN. I've got road work this year. I guess my big thing is, and this includes you as well, is our 18th year of New Year's Eve. at the Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove.
Always a great time.
Always a great time.
With yourself, with you and Steve Cochran.
I can't wait. I'll always look forward to that.
That's great. Well, also on your agenda is doing more episodes of...
Yes, sit-down stand-ups.
That's right. Yeah. And
you know, the next one, I should interview you.
I think that maybe would be a good idea. I'd like to thank once again our sponsor for today.
Great job.
Yeah, and thank you very much, John. We'll find out more and more about you as the weeks tick on.
Perfect.
And we'll see you next time. I'm Tim Benker.
I'm John DeCause.
See you.